say it all the time, but we hardly ever think about it. Or those other filler words we use to stall because we're nervous or to cue the person we're talking to. Is rarely written in books. It's usually scrubbed from TV and not included in film scripts. But Michael Erard, who's written a book titled says the word has always been with us. This staticky clip is the earliest recording of a guy named Thomas Edison.
Now, Mr. Blaine, as you've been hearing around the world, our unit will go to Milan. Milan will go to Rome. And then to Bombay.
About the only word you can make out from this 1888 recording is the non-word, And Michael Erard says that isn't insignificant.
The father of recording technology, the first word that he says is a moment of pausing, of delay, because he doesn't know what to say next. Filling pauses with those particular sounds in English happen about 40% of the time that we make errors, and we make errors about one every 4.4 seconds or one every 10 words.
And is this a universal phenomenon? You mentioned English. Does it happen in other languages? And do people say in, France?
Every language gives a speaker a way to fill a pause with a sound. Sometimes it's that neutral vowel. In English, it's In French, it's e. In Spanish, it's e. Other languages repurpose words that mean something else. So in Mandarin, the word for this and that is the word that you fill pauses with. So if you listen to Mandarin speakers, they'll say nega, nega, nega. Or in Japanese, it's ano, which also means this or that.
What about the public's patience for vagaries of spoken language? Is there, in fact, an ebb and flow to the way we all handle other people's speech errors?
We typically don't hear most of the uhs or the ums that other people say. There was one interesting study that was done where people are given a speech to listen to, and about half of them natively listen to the content, and about half of them natively, without any instruction, listen to the style. When the content, for whatever reason, becomes extremely boring, people who listen for content start listening for style, and that's when they start to notice uhs and the ums. So when people say to me, how do I reduce the uhs and ums, I say, that's easy. Just be more interesting.
Now, you mentioned that we typically filter out other people's speech errors, but not every other people. When the people are prominent, we tend to pay very strict attention. I'm thinking at the moment of President Bush, who is a serial offender and disfluencies of various kinds.
Sure.
What happens when a major public figure like the President of the United States is so language challenged?
What happens, I think, depends on what your expectations for leadership are. If you expect your leaders to be able to articulate positions and to persuade the public to follow those positions, then you would expect your leaders to be fluent, to speak in longer sentences. On the other hand, if you expect your leaders to be more like you, you might be willing to tolerate more verbal blunders. And so I think that assuming that Bush and the way that he speaks is a political liability overlooks how that mode of speech is also attractive.
Actually, your colleague, Jeff Nunberg, believes that the president actually cultivates his rough-hewn language in order to cultivate the part of the electorate that appreciates it.
I suspect that that's true. Now, it would be very difficult for someone to deliberately create some of the malapropisms and some of the true accidents that happen. So misunderestimate.
They misunderestimated the fact that we love a neighbor in need. They underestimated the compassion of our country.
He's very disfluent when he says it. So he's aware as he's saying it that he's not quite hitting it and it should be different. But at a certain point, he just lets the momentum of the word and the need to keep going take over, and he continues.
Let me ask you one more thing. I myself can barely utter an English sentence without making some sort of egregious error right in the middle of it. We naturally edit all of this stuff out of the show, or most of it. Are we doing our listeners a service by editing out my mistakes and yours as well, by the way?
I think you might be doing them a disservice. We live in a media environment that is very glib, and the glib has become praised over what is substantial. You know, in journalism, there's a sort of understanding that you won't make someone sound more stupid or low class or uneducated than they actually are. Quoting verbatim can be used to smear someone. But I think there's also a way to use it in a way that gives you a more authentic sense of who the person is.
Well, Michael, I very much appreciate this.
Thanks for having me.
Michael Erard is the author of the new book, Slips, Stumbles, and Verbal Blunders, and What They Mean.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.